Welcome to the Rob, Comrade, and Kale Show. Rob Sanders.
Somebody authentic who's actually really into it.
Comrade Mike Dobreski.
He's going to lisp his way through the whole program.
And Kale Hall.
I'm here so I won't get found.
The Rob, Comrade, and Kale Podcast. I'm
not ashamed no more. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the Rob and Comrade Show, the podcast that divides the Palmetto State. I'm Rob Sanders, your host. I represent the Clemson Tigers, winners of two out of the last four national championships. I also have a co-host for the show. Normally, I have two co-hosts. Well, our regular co-host, the bald man from the upstate, Kale Hall, will not join us this evening. Kale is sick. I don't know what he's got, but I don't want him to bring it here to me. So, anyway, Kale is out. We won't razz Kale too much, even though he's not here. I wanted to get Kale's thoughts on the Royal Rumble coming up on Sunday, but oh well.
You can ask me. Wait.
Well, speaking of which, I have a second co-host. He's more of a gambling degenerate. He knows nothing about the WWE. All he knows is Hulk Hogan's a good wrestler, and the only women's wrestler he likes is Miss Elizabeth, who is dead. He is the Comrade, Mike Dobreski. Mike, good evening, sir.
It is good to be here. And hey, listen, if Hulk Hogan's all you know, then that's all you need to know. He is the greatest of all time. I was a Hulkamaniac. I ran around with a shirt on, with the Eye of the Tiger playing, you know.
What I said about Miss Elizabeth is true, too, though, right?
That is true. Miss Elizabeth, I had a little crush on her growing up. I have to admit it. I thought that she was the dream girl. That's what she brought home to mom.
Yeah,
right there.
If you were walking around and Macho Man heard that, he'd be yelling at you, "Oh, you can't talk to Elizabeth, can't have it. But you know who I am? I'm the Macho Man. It's right there on my boots. First name Macho, last name Man. Stop looking at Elizabeth. We can't have it." That's exactly what he would say to you.
And I think most people know this, but you know, Randy Savage, Randy Poffo was a minor league baseball player, a really good ball player, who actually got hurt. I mean, he was projected to be a major league
for the Cardinals.
He played for the for the Cardinals. Yeah, but
he was
special. But I think he hurt his knee, and he never was quite the same. But he was like a big time. I mean, back then they didn't really kind of the prospects weren't like on how they are now, or they were on Baseball America magazine, their rankings on websites. But back then he was thought of pretty highly, and hurt his knee, and he went into wrestling. The rest is history.
He was a hell of an athlete. He really was. So yeah, there's that. We've also got a couple of sponsors we need to thank. Of course, we'll start with Callaway's Bar and Grill out in West Columbia, Highway 1 diagonal from the Walmart. You can go by and check them out. Get you some great food, some cold beer. The best people are at Callaway's. Retro video games, all kinds of good stuff. At CallawaysBarAndGrill.com. You can go and learn more about them. They're also on Facebook, so go and check them out. Also, we have Dennis Wilson from DNC Trucking and Transport. He has the No Spin Zone segment every week here. And basically, he keeps the comrade from spinning his web of deception. This is the No Spin Zone, brought to you by DNC Trucking and Transport. Comrade, read away.
It sucks to be a Gamecock. Clemson has won six straight against my piss-poor team. Since the Hoops team lost tonight, I guess I can go back to being upset with them. I can never be upset with the football team. I am happy with a 4-8 season our wonderful coach gave us. I'm looking forward to our next disaster season. Remember, it sucks to be a Gamecock. Go Tigers.
That message courtesy of Dennis Wilson, DNC Trucking and Transport. It's funny every week. Can't help it. Good stuff there from Dennis Wilson. DNC Trucking and Transport, thanks to Dennis for checking us out and being a supporter of the show. You can be a supporter of the show, too. Go to robincomrade.com. We have several patrons, including Lawton Swan of Clemson Sports, the Czar of Clemson Sports, Thomas Dana Young, Stacey Marie Hamp, Keith Harrelson, Jamie Phillips, Tabitha Sims, Robert Knight, Positive Mike, Lisa Sister Harkin. She's watching online tonight. We appreciate her. Jeff Pritchett, Christian Young, Nathan Medlin, and Sally Donegan and Eddie Hicks. We've got to get their names up on the website. We appreciate them. The Eddie does a lot of our graphics stuff, which, by the way, I forgot to mention, we're the Rob, Comrade, and Kale show. I messed that up earlier, but it's my fault. But if you're looking for Kale, you can follow him on Twitter. He's at Carolina Jackpot. Apparently, Kale is sick tonight. He missed that. I venture to say it's the bird flu. I could be wrong. I don't know. Anyway, we are going to have a good show tonight, hopefully. To my left is my nice, big, huge TV my wife bought for me. And Zion Williamson will be making his debut tonight. Everybody talks about him being the second coming. I'll take Ja Morant every day and twice on Sunday over Zion Williamson. But he will be at it tonight. His debut for the New Orleans Pelicans going over here to my left. I kind of want to see how he's going to play. Comrade, do you think he's going to be viable in the NBA or do you think he's going to be a bust?
I don't know. I mean, he's not going to live up to this hype because it's impossible. His hype is unreal. I mean, his hype is on LeBron's level of hype when he came out, and he's not going to be as good as LeBron. I mean, that's nothing bad. I mean, LeBron is on the Mount Rushmore, you can say, of all-time players. But tonight, his over and under, though, for tonight's game is 12.5 points and 5.5 rebounds. I think I'm going under. I'm not sure he's going to play a whole lot tonight. I doubt he goes out there and plays 35 minutes. He's probably going to play about...
He's not in game shape.
He'll play minutes. I would take the under on that for sure, but maybe he adrenaline comes out there. He's going to be a little bit rusty as well. So I just think that's the under in Vegas. So if you're in Vegas right now, which would be, I mean, I would live in Vegas in 2 seconds. I think I'm going under on both of those right there. And I think I would take some money home with me.
Yeah, well, I think that Zion Williamson is going to be a bust. And I tell you why. My buddy, Marcus Saxon, who was his resume, so you can understand why I respect him as a basketball player, he went and played for Nolan Richardson at Arkansas. He was one of the guys that was on Nolan Richardson's last couple of teams. When Nolan Richardson got the axe, he transferred to Utah State, and I think he is still their all-time leading scorer, and I think he's maybe their all-time leading assist man. He's a heck of a player for them there. That, and he's the all-time leading scorer, I believe, at AC Flora, if I remember correctly. But the man knows his basketball. He thinks he's too heavy for the NBA, for his height and his build and everything else. He's built like a tight end. And the wear and tear of an 82-game season will eventually get to him. He thinks injuries will eventually wash him out of the league. That, and I don't think anybody can live up to the hype. They were showing – the only thing that ESPN can show you tonight is his stats from Duke. That's what they have right now, which is kind of out there and bizarre. But watch, he'll probably go on to be a Hall of Famer since I threw shade at him. You never know. Right, Mike?
Well, I think his body will change a little bit too. I mean, if you remember back in my day, in your day, Charles Barkley – look at old Charles Barkley footage of him with the Sixers his first 2 years. He was a porker, okay? And he was called around on the rebound, and he could jump out of the building still. And he didn't really have injury problems, but I think he realized pretty quick that he had a hard time, you know, keeping up with the other NBA players because of his weight. And he realized he had to change his diet. And change his routine and stuff and do that. So
you know why he did that, right? Moses Malone got with him. He told the story about that at his funeral. Moses Malone is the reason why I had the career I had, because he, you know, got into my butt and told me, hey, you got to make sure you got your stuff together here. And that's what he needed. So
And if you look at Barkley, you know, after that in his Phoenix days, Barkley was always in good shape. I mean, he was – you know, not he wasn't skinny guy, but he was in good shape, and he became, you know, that one year, I mean, his MVP year, the year they lost to the Bulls in the finals. I mean, Barkley was unreal, and people forget how great he was. But so I think it will kind of come in there right now. I think Zion will kind of understand that once he plays in the league for a little bit. Now with the injury problems too, that I got to get in better shape and And hopefully, you know, the problem with knees, though, man, I tell you, you just if you have knee problems, it leads to other problems. And so hopefully that's not the case for him, but we'll see.
So Zion Williamson makes his debut tonight. You'll hear plenty of that on ESPN. They've got a big mural of him out there in New Orleans. Holy crap. Anyway, moving along here, some things we'll get into today. I sent I read something from an Alabama fan site, which who knew that Alabama fans could write, much less read. This is from RollTideRoll.com. These folks are upset over the Clemson schedule. And it's kind of funny because this guy puts out there a lot of stuff about Clemson's schedule and how he's not happy with it. But on the other hand, when you really stop and look at the Clemson schedule, and we've talked about this before, they can't help who's on their conference schedule. No. They can't help that Florida State is a gong show right now. They can't help that NC State, even when they were up a little bit, they're not up anymore. You know, they can't help their conference stuff. As far as their non-conference schedule this year, they're going to Notre Dame and they're playing South Carolina. They can't help that Carolina, South Carolina is a gong show. They can't help that. So the other thing too, is if you look at their schedule, Akron is on the schedule, but they're a replacement for Oklahoma State who backed out of a contract. So if we had Oklahoma State on the schedule, that gives you your three Power Five teams, plus your eight in conference teams and the Citadel. If Oklahoma State were on the schedule, Mike, would you think that would make the schedule? As Mike pops away there. Anyway, Michael, rejoin us in just a moment. If Oklahoma State were on the schedule, then I think that would be a much, much tougher schedule. You got a team from the SEC, one of the top independent team in the country. And in addition to that, you've got a team from the Big 12. That's tough. Tough stuff there. Melanie says she used to watch the Gong Show. Yeah, the Gong Show. Mean Gene the Dancing Machine. Remember him? Yeah, he had his legs amputated. Kind of tough there. But when you really stop and think about it and you look at the schedule, there's nothing Clemson can do about it. But I want to read you a little piece of this here from this guy. He's blaming the commissioner of the ACC, John Swofford. He says, so what is the commissioner to do to keep the Power Five gravy train rolling, even as its mediocre teams ring up losses and undeserved bowls and bowl challenges there? Crazy. Anyway, as we try to bring the comrade back, some notes from folks online. Johnny says, I'm a South Carolina fan, but you can't count SC in. Count in at this, they a cupcake team till we get rid of Muschamp. Yeah, you can make that argument. Ryan Henderson says Clemson can only play what's given to them. That's a true statement too. But it's amazing though, when you really stop and look at what Clemson's schedule is, there's nothing they can do about it. So I don't know. But the more and more I look at the Clemson schedule, I'm like, what else do you want Clemson to do? I don't get it. I mean, they would have had Oklahoma State on the record. It's not on the schedule, but they're not. It's just kind of silly. I mean, it really is. So I think that it is interesting, though, that you get a bunch of people talking about, we have you know, Clemson's got just a path to the national title, not really giving Clemson credit for the team that they built. You know what I'm saying? It's just kind of weird and out there. Hey, this is the team Clemson built. Why can't people just say, hey, you know what? Maybe they just have a good program. I think I'm tired of people with the adage that, you know, Clemson doesn't play anybody. It's kind of shameful. Positive Mike, that's a very good quote. I've been hearing the ACC is garbage since the 80s. Very good point there. I had the comrade back to the stream here. Hello, comrade.
Hello, hello, hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Anyway. Okay. I don't know what happened to your stuff there. I don't know.
Something happens with my laptop on that site. It knocks me off. My internet's working fine. So maybe the phone will be better. We'll try it this way and see what happens.
Well, at least we can hear you now, so that's great. Kale uses his phone. You can use your phone. Everybody can hear you there. Anyway, what I was wanting your opinion on was, I know that you're not going to be a guy that's going to hold up Clemson's schedule, but there really isn't anything Clemson can do. As I said, Clemson had Oklahoma State on the schedule, but they're replaced with Akron because Oklahoma State backed out. If you have Oklahoma State on the schedule, you got a team from the Big 12, the number one independent in the country in Notre Dame, and South Carolina. That's impressive to me as a schedule. Would you agree?
Well, listen, I have never once, blamed Clemson for their schedule. I mean, Clemson, in all fairness, they try to schedule teams. So they don't try to, not play anybody. That being said, the reality of it is your schedule is crap, and it's been crap now. This year coming up, this past year is crap, and it's not your fault. I mean, A&M, you put up your schedule, who was kind of down. Everyone was thinking with Jimbo Fisher there, year two, he'd have them rolling by now a little bit more, and they're not. And then, of course, the Gamecocks have been, a tire fire here the last couple of years. And so then you have the ACC, which has been horrible. I mean, the ACC is just absolutely horrible. And maybe that's changing a little bit. Maybe Miami can get some talent. They got the new quarterback now. But still, it's just there's a huge gap. And I think it frustrates people, not just Gamecock people. You think it's a Gamecock fan thing, but just college football fans in general, because most teams have to have some hurdles they have to go over during the season. Like, they have some games they have to take care of. And you look at Clemson's schedule, and there's no way they can lose a game unless they totally don't show up, okay? And even then, they can probably get one, find a way to win the game. So, most teams don't have that. Most teams have two or three games in their schedule where if they don't play well, they're going to lose. And so that's what's frustrating part. And, of course, he's going to point this out, too. You have Notre Dame this season. It's your toughest game. You have a bye week before then. Correct? So your biggest game of the schedule, you've a bye week before. So it's like, not only do you have one tough game, but you get a bye week before the game. And so it's like everything kind of sets up perfectly
It is funny that, and the other thing that people talk about is that Clemson gets an extra couple of days to prepare for Florida State because they play Boston College on a Friday night and then play Florida State. They get more time, which I think we've talked about this before, and I guess we both kind of agree on this. Why are they playing games on a Friday night? It makes no sense. Clemson has a Thursday night opener at Georgia Tech. I don't get playing Thursday night games. Let college football be special on Saturdays. Just play your games then. Makes the most sense. You don't have to compete with anybody. But I don't know. I don't think that the commissioner's office goes out and says, you know what, let's make Clemson's schedule as easy as possible. I mean, Clemson's not the only football team there. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they can't – I don't think that John Swofford's like, hey, let's make it easy for Clemson. That doesn't make any sense.
No, I mean, I'm not sure how they go about doing the schedule. I mean, I'm sure there's lots of moving parts making a schedule, so I don't think they're sitting there doing it on purpose or anything like that. Just kind of the luck of the draw, and Clemson seems to get that. But, I mean, the real problem is someone in the ACC has to step up and start being a football program again. And, I mean, North Carolina looks like the closest team. I mean, they're the ones recruiting the best, but, I mean, North Carolina, think about that. That's going to be the school that challenges you. I don't know. I just think.
Well, what does North Carolina have that a lot of the other schools don't? A great head coach.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's older too. I think there's a shelf life for him because, like anything, he's recruiting fine now. But the question is, I mean,
he's older, and so he's not going to be there forever. So you start recruiting against them. Just like when Spurrier said the whole 2 to 3 year comment, you know, and that kind of burned him because, like, now all of a sudden you get recruited and you realize when you leave. The problem is it just seems like Clemson's road to the Final Four is really simple. And it's like they're not tested, and it's like, you know, they want to see Clemson play some games. It's not their fault. And once again, I'm not blaming Clemson. Everyone thinks that every time I bring up a schedule, they always go, what do you want us to do? I'm not blaming Clemson. It's one thing if you were purposely scheduling crap, okay? But you're not doing that. It's just how it
they're
goes.
Not, they're the not ACC on the Kansas State method, you know?
And I would imagine, too, like, being honest, you know, that I know for me, I want the Gamecocks to win football games. Don't get me wrong. But I like when we play really good teams. I mean, there's an excitement that builds up for the week when you have a big game, as opposed to playing Charleston Southern. I mean, I don't really get, like, geeked up for that game. I'm like, okay, let's make sure we don't embarrass. Let's make sure we don't, you know, screw around and lose, or make sure we don't look bad. But when we're playing Georgia.
How about make sure nobody gets hurt? Yeah, that's the big thing.
I mean, but you're playing Georgia or a Florida. I mean, it's like it's a big week coming up, you know, and you're excited. And I don't know from Clemson's perspective, but how excited are you getting to play, you know, a lot of these teams in your schedule? It's got to be kind of, you know, not entertaining for if you're a Clemson fan, I'd imagine. I don't know. I haven't been in a situation where my team's blowing everybody by 85 points and we don't play anybody. But I just know that it's, you know, it would be cool. And listen, I watch and it's exciting to watch them play against a team that can hang with them. And then you don't see it in the schedule. Like Notre Dame would be the only one, and I'm not sure Notre Dame can hang with them. But Notre Dame is good enough that if Clemson goes out there and doesn't play well, they can lose. You know, but, you know, the LSU game was fun. Not because you guys lost, that was fun too, but it was, and the Ohio State game was fun as well, even though you guys won for me, just because you finally were playing a team that could match you athletically. So now you get to watch a football game, as opposed to Clemson has to really be half asleep in order for this Wake Forest team to stay in the ball game. You know, Trevor Lawrence is going to throw four picks and two of them have to come back. You know, he'll have to probably get hurt and sprain an ankle and miss the quarter. And then maybe Wake Forest can win. And maybe, you know, North Carolina can win, all that stuff. So, well, I mean, that's the thing.
But the guy that wrote this is an Alabama fan. And if you look at Alabama's schedule, they play Southern Cal at a neutral site, which, you know, is frustrating. Schedule a home and home. That's what you should do. They play Georgia State. They have Georgia at home, Kent State at home. They go to Ole Miss. They go to Arkansas. Then they have Mississippi State as well as a trip to Tennessee. Then they go on the road to LSU. Then they play the UT Martin team. I like trying to stump the comrade with these. What is UT Martin's mascot there, comrade? Any guesses?
The Martin,
any guesses from the folks?
Know.
In here?
I'm sure once you tell me, I'm not sure.
Well, anyway, they're the Skyhawks. They will make the trip to Alabama. Then you got Texas A&M and Auburn. Now, when you look at that schedule, I think Clemson would be favored in every one of those games except and maybe the Auburn game, maybe the Georgia game.
Well, and you would because you're one of the best programs in the country, and Bam would be favored in those games too. The difference is, though, that the margin for error in those games is not real big for Bam. But they can't go out there and play like crap and win and come out undefeated. Where the margin for error for Clemson is wide. I mean, you have to really – in some of your games you play, majority of your conference games you play – all your conference, I don't count Notre Dame as a conference game, obviously. So all your conference games, you have to play pretty piss poor to lose a game. Okay? And Bama can't play bad against Auburn and win. Bama can't play bad against A&M and win. So that's the difference. It's you know, and that's part of college football, is you're not always going to play your best. And sometimes, you know, when you're favored, that can happen. The Clemson has to have play bad, have an injury, have, you know, fluke stuff happen to lose. It's just it's too much to overcome in those games. So you'd be favored in all those games. Yeah, you're probably right. But the problem is those teams can still match up with you athletically for the most part. And it's just a difference
matchup with them athletically is Georgia. I think LSU's lost too much, in my opinion. And everybody else is rebuilding. And the UT Martin Skyhawks, I think Clemson wins by 70. Same thing for the Kent State Golden Flashes.
Bama does not schedule very tough. I hate neutral site games. I hate bowl games, man. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I told you before, the only bowl game I like is the Rose Bowl. I hate, you know, that what makes college football great to me is the campus games. That's what makes it better than the NFL. I mean, I like the NFL too for the skill of the players and the tradition, you know, but you're not watching the NFL for the atmosphere. You know, I like watching Green Bay Packer games and Patriot games and playoff games at home because of the weather factor comes in. But, you know, but it's still very kind of sterile. The NFL home crowds, you know, it's just, you know, the Buffalo Bills have a pretty good home crowd, you know, but in college football, it's all about that on campus, you know, experience. And so that's why I wish they'd play the playoff games. I really wish they go to the four teams would play in their home field. You know, I think it'd be a good idea to have, you know, a benefit. If you're the one seed, they got to come through you, you know, and that way the Big Ten fans who cry and piss and moan all the time about you can't play up in the weather, well, we'll find out. If Ohio is a 2 seed 1 year and they got a home game against the 3 seed, you know, Auburn, that'd be awesome. Columbus in December, you know, I mean, that'd be pretty cool because some of the great playoff games are in weather games, you know, so.
Right.
The playoff games, they're fine. I know they want to make them kind of good weather. The best team wins. But I think it'd be pretty cool to see home playoff games, you know, to have that. I think that'd make the sport better. But I doubt that will happen because these bowl games have tie-ins and money is involved and you got these people. By the way, my job I want to be a bowl director of some crappy bowl. We'll do a Robin Comrade Bowl. Those bowl directors make some big time money for these crappy bowls. You ever know that? They don't do crap. Yeah. They don't do anything really. And they
interviewed the guy that's money. The head of the Peach Bowl. That was he does nothing but just travel around talking
you
about.
You don't pick the teams really. You're kind of like, and then there's one guy. There's another guy who's a job. Oh my lord, he's like the director of all the bowls. Okay,
yeah.
He does nothing. He makes $185,000 a year and does nothing because the bowl games kind of pick themselves. He's just his quality control guy, which is basically what me and you do at our computers. Oh, okay, so Ohio State's playing that bowl. Oh, that's good. I like that. That's a good game.
That's funny. Okay.
And so, but we may have a Robin Comrade and Kale Bowl. We'll put it, you know, in Liberty, South Carolina. David Buss can be the grand marshal of the parade. We'll make some bank. We'll pick the MAC champion against the ACC Coastal fifth place team. That'll be the matchup. Yeah.
The bowl prize will be 8 bags of meth from Liberty.
Yeah.
8 bags of meth and a baseball cap.
Mickey Freeman will do the coin flip.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
It'll be sponsored by a funeral home so David Butts can leave. What a shitful bowl that would be.
Great, but we get it on TV, though. It'll be on a ESPN noon slot on December 19th on a Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday on noon the 19th. Yeah. Tune in.
Oh, shit. That would be so bad. And then, since you're going to be the one picking teams, if South Carolina goes 5-7, if they don't have enough teams from the American, you're lobbying to get South Carolina in a home game, basically.
Big time home game.
Doing that. That's funny. Holy shit. All right. Well, moving along here, a couple of more things before we get out of here tonight. For those of you listening, this is the Rob Comrade and Kale Show. Kale is sick. I don't know what the hell's wrong with Kale. He's got the bird flu or something like that. So anyway, that would be the third leg of this show. We appreciate Kale, even though he's, I don't know, he's maybe puking his lungs out. I don't know. He said he couldn't join us. So I don't want to bury on it too much, but South Carolina loses to Auburn tonight. Auburn finally came out of the funk that they were in. I thought South Carolina would keep it close, but Keyshawn Bryant did not play. Kind of expected this going in. If he doesn't play, it kind of hinders South Carolina, right, Mike?
Well, I mean, you know, Auburn has not been playing really well, and they started off playing really bad, too, and I thought we'd get a break. I thought, good, they haven't. They're still playing bad, but we can steal one here. But they started playing up to their level and ability, and we were in trouble. If Keyshawn Bryant plays tonight, we probably still don't win, to be honest with you. But the thing that hurts us still is that A.J. Lawson is still not A.J. Lawson. He took 8 shots tonight. I mean, Cousinard has taken over as the alpha dog in the team, which is fine, but I think – That wasn't the plan for this year. The plan for this year was A.J. Lawson to be, for better lack of, I'm not comparing him to this guy, but to be the Michael Jordan of the Gamecocks, and Cousinard to be Pippen, right?
Right.
And then Keyshawn Bryant to be the finisher, okay, down low and transition guy, and then Coach Sauter to play good defense and all that stuff. That team right there is a tournament team. That's a team that's dangerous, okay? But right now we got A.J. Lawson who – has no confidence. He's taking 8 shots a game. He's beyond. He's not even close to being the alpha dog. And Cousinard, who I love, who has stepped up and has taken that role, but he's a true freshman, and it's his first year playing college basketball, and he gets better every game. But you know, if he's the main guy, you know, we're gonna struggle. And then on top of that, Bryant doesn't play as well. Trent Hannibal didn't play tonight either. But of course, even when he's healthy, he's not playing.
So well, but they were shorthanded, and I don't want to rub the Gamecock nose in it because, first of all, you've got 12 games left in the season. We'll see what the Gamecocks can do from here. I don't even know what to think about this team anymore, but the same thing goes for the Clemson team. I want to move into Clemson real quick here, Mike, because I've got two other things I want to get into after that, and I don't want us on the air all damn night. But Clemson won a game over Wake Forest. It's the first time in forever that I can remember that they beat every team on Tobacco Road in the same season. That doesn't happen very often with wins over NC State, Wake, Duke, and North Carolina. You don't have very many seasons like that. But in the end, they're still not a good basketball team. And they have the capability to be pretty good sometimes. If they're hitting the three-point shot, they're great. If they get a big outing from the young man who went off last night, Hunter Tyson, they can play great. But last night, to finish the game against a Wake Forest team that, according to Connor O'Neill, who's the beat writer for the Winston-Salem Journal, he goes to every Wake Forest game. They're not a very good basketball team. They threw a zone at Clemson last night. Clemson did not score a field goal in the last 3 minutes and 7 seconds of the game, and they went 7 for 18 at the free throw line. Okay. I know that sounds silly, but you can't go three, and they have stretches like that every game where they go 3-4 minutes without a basket, and they don't shoot free throws well. I just don't get it. And in addition to that, they don't shoot free throws well, but they damn sure have everybody and their brother jacking threes. It is, to me, that's a coaching thing. And I know you give me grief about what I said about Dabo Swinney years ago, but I think that looking at this team, we've got to think about what we're going to do next season with Brad Brownell and on his way out, because – this is just not a good basketball team. And what do you have to look forward to next year? Nothing. I mean, they got Tevin Mack, and I thought, all right, that'll be great. But I hate to agree with the Russian here, but there's a reason he didn't go to South Carolina, because Frank Martin wouldn't have put up with his shit. Go 0 for 7 from three-point land, and then you're not going to drive and cut or play defense? Get out of here with all that nonsense. That's stupid. It's just stupid. What are your thoughts on Clemson there, Mike?
Well, it'd be interesting to see what happens, because, as you mentioned before, you beat all the teams in the back of the road. You ended your Chapel Hill streak. You beat Duke. I mean, can you really fire him after a year like that? I mean, I know the fan, he's been there for a while. The other question is who do you get? I know there's rumblings now about Shaka Smart.
We've given him enough time. Don't you agree on that?
Oh, yeah, you get enough time. I'm just curious if you can fire him after a year. You know, we have to see how it plays out. Maybe they get hot, they get in the tournament, or they get an NIT or whatever. But, you know, the interesting name I keep on hearing is Shaka Smart could be done at Texas. And there's people who are, like, really torn on Shaka Smart. The people who like him say, well, Texas is a weird place to coach, and it's he's, you know, it's kind of a tough place to coach and to support. Other people say that he's overrated, that all he had was that one run in March with VCU, and you know, that was it, and he didn't really do well in the regular season, and you know, he's basically living off of that one March. And so but Shaka Smart's a name that, if he gets fired, is that a guy who can win at Clemson? I know some Clemson fans have been tweeting about they think Shaka Smart will do well at Clemson, but it'll be kind of curious to see what happens on that end.
Well, on the Shaka Smart end, what I like about Shaka Smart is that he has a system that he runs. Okay. And it's he runs it the same way that Oliver Purnell ran his system, in that we're going to get big, tall, long guys with long arms, and we're going to pressure the basketball, and we're going to be the best at shooting layups, and hope we get a couple of three-point shooters to help us on that front. I like that, and the reason that I like that is because you can't recruit guys like Zion Williamson that are in Spartanburg. They're going to go to Duke. They're going to go to North Carolina. I mean, it's as simple as that. But you can get some great players, that not really great players, but athletes, and then teach them basketball and have them where they go to the tournament every year and be respectable. That's what I think that we need, is a guy like Shaka Smart, who was an assistant coach at Clemson, by the way, there, comrade. You remember that, right?
I do a little bit. That's why kind of his name is always linked to Clemson, thinking he'll come back to one of his coaching things.
Glenn has a great comment. Hire Earl Grant from the College of Charleston. Yes, sir. Another former Clemson assistant who I know very well. I've talked to Earl Grant a couple of times. Great, great guy. Would do a lot of great stuff at Clemson. So there's that with the Clemson program. And they're going to play Louisville this weekend, and they may come out and shoot, you know, 15 of 18 from the three-point line. And they may give Louisville a run for their money. I doubt it. Or they may get blown the hell out. It'll be one or the other. They're a frustrating basketball team to watch, because you feel like there's no hope. When you watch the South Carolina basketball team, on the other hand, you see what Frank Martin's done, and you feel like he's building, even though they don't go to the tournament, you feel like they're building and they're going to be pretty good.
Building something special.
No. Shut up, douche. But I'm just saying, you feel like he's trying to build and maintain a program, whereas Brownell is just like, let me get all these guys that transfer in and out, and we'll just hope to put together a decent team every year. And that's just a load of horse shit. So anyway, enough with the Clemson stuff. one other thing that I wanted to pitch to you this evening here, Mike. Oh, I sent this to you and Kale earlier. Kobe Bryant came out today and said he thinks Diana Taurasi, Della Don, or Elena Della Don, and Maya Moore could play in the NBA right now. I ask you this because you can tell me if I'm sexist or not. I don't think that would work. I really don't. And I know that I sound like I'm a sexist chauvinist pig here, but there are some, I mean, Diana Taurasi's a hell of a player. Don't get me wrong. Della Don's a great player. Maya Moore's a great player, but just the physics doesn't work. You're going to be playing against guys that are bigger, built stronger. I just don't think that works, Mike. Am I a sexist pig, or
do you think probably work? Not. I'd love to see it, though. I would love to see it. But I would say this, though. The style of the NBA now is more conducive to that happening than, say, 20 years ago. Yeah. Just because of now it's a finesse game. It's a spacing game. It's a three-point shooting game. And so, you know, I can see it happen. I'm not sure if they can. I mean, Diana Taurasi is getting a little older, I think, isn't she? I'm not saying she's old, but I could see it happening here soon with the style of play. Now, if the NBA was being played like that was in the 80s, where it was Lane, it was, you know, it was the physical play, it was the grabbing, it was the hand checking, it was, you know, that stuff where, you know, spacing was not really what you're about. It's all about getting close to the rim and getting the high percentage shots, and you didn't shoot threes, then no way. But I think the way the NBA is being played now, I would like to see it. I don't think it's a strength thing, okay? I'm wondering if they're quick enough to get their shots off.
Isn't that a strength thing there, Mike?
Are they good enough athletes to get their shots off? It's not, you know, well, you know, so
Taurasi's 37. Yeah, so
that's the other thing too. You know, give me a 23-year-old Diana Taurasi, okay, and I like to see that. But I could see it. The NBA continues to play the way it's playing, which, by the way, is I don't like the way they play nowadays. It's and I listen. When I played, I was a 3-point shooter. That's what I did. I was spot on 3-point shooter. That's all I could do at the high school level. And I can't watch it. I mean, I got Zion here a little bit, but it's hard to watch. And I get why they're doing it. I get that the GMs now are smart and they figured out that the best play, the best way of playing is a 3-point shot. The problem is every team plays that way. And I just can't stand it. And so what the NBA has to do is figure out a way, just like baseball is going to try doing too, to make rules where there's more than one way to win and build a team. And the best when sports are the best is when you have teams who are built different ways and they try winning different ways. I think back in baseball in the 80s, you had your speed teams like the Cardinals who would not hit home runs. They'd get on base and they would try to steal. Yeah,
makes sense.
Then you have teams who are power teams who want to hit Earl Weaver's Baltimore Orioles, the 3-run homer. They both would work. They both could work. In baseball, the problem is now that you have analytics and very smart people running the games. And they figured out here's the best way to win, and every team does it that way. And so you have to kind of change up the rules a little bit or make it where other ways to play can be equally beneficial. And right now, stealing bases is not beneficial. It doesn't help the way the game is being played. And so baseball has to change up, you know, how they do the stolen bases. Basketball the same way. Maybe move the 3-point line back, further so where that percentage is down. Or do something along those lines, or personally, I would only get rid of a 3-point shot. That'd be my thing. Go back to how it used to be played. But
now you're being stupid.
You know, but I think it'd be pretty cool to do one season like that and see what happens. Just like I love to see the PGA Tour if they gave everyone the same exact clubs from 1975. You get standard clubs.
Now you're the old man telling people to get off.
I'm just curious. Like the PGA Tour, it's a great idea. I want to see which players still stay up on top. And I'm talking really, I think this rule, you want to judge a golfer, not their equipment. Why not? Why shouldn't everyone get the same set of clubs? Standard set of clubs. Here they are. Standard ball. Here it is. I'm shocked Augusta hasn't done this. Augusta keeps on changing their course. I'm shocked Augusta hasn't said, because Augusta could get away with it. They could say, hey, by the way, here's the golf ball you use. It's the same golf ball everyone gets. You can put your own damn numbers on it. Everyone gets the same exact golf ball. It's a golf ball from 1980 specs, okay? Here it is. But I would do that. Whatever Jack Nicklaus had in his golf bag in 1975, you go ahead and make that, and that's the clubs everyone uses. Just go ahead on the assembly line, turn them out. There it is. Everyone gets a 3-iron. Okay, no more hybrid crap. Here's what you play with. Okay, you're in the PGA Tour. Let's see how you play. Okay, let's see who all still right. stays on top. So well, that's just me.
That's the old man on the lawn theory.
But, hey, that's what I'm getting old, but hey.
Yeah.
That's what I would do if I was sports commissioner, sports czar.
Yeah, you'd run the Robin Comrade Bowl and give all the players a bag of meth and go to Liberty.
Yeah, that's true too. Liberty, South Carolina.
Terrible. Anyway, final thing I want to go over this evening, and I need you, Mike. I know you have your Boston Red Sox cheaters flag behind you. By the way, headline, there's a headline on ESPN earlier on their little ticker. The commissioner says they're not going to take away the championships for the Astros or the Red Sox. If you thought they were going to take away the championships, then you're just galactically stupid. And terrible.
Yeah. First of all, the Red Sox, they haven't investigated yet. Let's wait.
I'm not going to let you give the Red Sox case your manager.
Well, I'm just saying. Let's find out first what exactly the Red Sox did. Holy I'm not saying they're innocent, but let's find out what they did. And I think you're going to find out that what they did,
all right,
compared to what the Astros did, is very different. Not because we were better people, but because I think we were limited in how we achieved.
You had a shittier stadium that didn't have enough.
Well, I think that too, but also I think because some of the veterans on the Red Sox, when Cora came over, just that's not how they would roll. But I'm not going to defend the Red Sox. If it comes
I
out,
need you.
They're a buzzer and all that shit too. That's fine. But keep in mind now, the one difference is the Red Sox could not cheat in the playoffs. They did not have access to the cameras in the playoffs, unlike the Astros.
No, that's why I said I don't want. I know you're the big Red Sox guy. By the way, if you're a Red Sox fan, you should be reading Comrade's blog. It's at thepeskypole.com. If you're a big
Red Sox .net.
Thepeskypole.net. Pescypole.net. Go and check that out if you're a Red Sox apologist and you don't want anything to happen to the Red Sox. That's where you got to go. But I need you to take your hat off there for a minute for the Red Sox nation, because I want you to be as unbiased as you can here. Can you do that for me with this topic?
Yes.
Okay. Derek Jeter did not get into the Hall of Fame as a unanimous selection. And Yankee fans are pissed about it. They've already have the one player that was put in unanimously, which is Mariano Rivera. And you and I both agree that relievers shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, because if in my mind, it's exactly the way that you think. If you're a reliever, you weren't good enough to be a starter. That's pretty much how you feel, right?
Well, yeah, I don't mind Rivera being in. My rule would be, at the time of the voting, if you're the best all-time closer, you can go in.
Okay. Like
Trevor Hoffman, Billy Wagner, I'm sorry. Raleigh Fingers, at the time, he was the best all-time closer, you can go in. But, like, I don't want a bunch of relievers in there. And by the way, if you sit there and say, and you someone today on some Facebook page, I don't know where it was comparing Rivera's stats to Pedro and Schilling's stats. Okay, you're a moron. Okay, don't sit there and give me, oh, his whip was lower, his ERA was lower. Yeah, you want to know why? Because he pitched one inning at a time. You know, that's why, then sat down. Do you think Pedro could do that? You come in and face three guys, and you could.
Can you imagine Pedro as a closer? He would have been
insane. I mean, it's not taking anything Rivera. He's the greatest closer of all time. He was a closer because he could not be a starter. He didn't have enough effective pitches, so he went down to the bullpen, and that's what happens. If you look at the history of guys, John Smoltz was a very good starter for a long time. He had Tommy John surgery. They wanted to save his elbow. They go, John, go be a closer. He became dominant. dominant. Why? Because closing is much easier than starting. You don't have to save yourself. You don't have to sit there and mix up your pitches. You go in there and throw your best, nastiest stuff, and that's it. Dennis Eckersley was a real good starter, had an alcohol problem. He was struggling. Hey, Dennis, be a closer. Unhittable. Why? Because it's one inning now. You can rely on your two pitches. It's much easier. Okay? And so Rivera was great, but let's kind of, you know,
We agree on that. But he was the only one put in unanimously. Baseball writers, whatever.
Yeah.
Put him in unanimously. That we can't take that back. But they're pissed off because one guy did not vote for Derek Jeter, and he didn't get his unanimous election. And the Yankee fans about this are being crybaby bitches, because when I was looking at like all these players that I think are better than Derek Jeter that didn't get unanimously selected. You can call me a homer, but I think Chipper Jones was a better player. I think Willie Mays was a better player.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't think that Derek Jeter was the best Yankee. They got 20 guys in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. He wasn't even the best Yankee, in my opinion.
Okay, true serum for me real quick. Okay? Derek Jeter should be in the Hall of Fame. Okay? But here's the problem, though. Okay? So back in the day, when Babe Ruth went in and Ty Cobb went in, they were unanimous. Some idiot says, you know what? Oh, damn, I'm going to vote for them. And so what happens is then Ted Williams comes along and they go, well, shit, if Babe Ruth ain't the Hall of Famer, first ballot, unanimous, indeed, doing Ted Williams isn't. And then, you know, Mike Schmidt comes up. Well, damn, it's Willie Mays and Ted Williams weren't, and Mike Schmidt's not. So it keeps on going on and on, okay? It's stupid. Okay, it's stupid. My biggest fear, and I'm glad this didn't happen, is that people are now starting to realize it's dumb. Okay, and this realization has been happening. It started with Rivera. Rivera, listen, I think he should be the Hall of Famer. The fact that he's the first guy to go unanimous makes my stomach turn. It's a closer. And I was almost for sure. I could see the writing on the wall. I told my dad this. I go, that bastard Jeter is the first position player to go 100%. I said, and I go, that this is typical of his career. He's overrated. Now, let me get this straight now. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer, okay? But he's overrated. He's been overrated his whole career. And listen, that's not his fault. That's playing for the Yankees. That's playing on great teams. When everything he does, I mean – so, but it had been typical of his career to have on his plaque, first time, the first position player to go 100%. The guy who did not vote for him is a saint. I'm going to find out his name. I'm going to find out his address. It'll be out there soon because Yankee fans are livid. And I'm going to send him Christmas cards from now until he dies. Okay? I am just glad that he's not the first position player to go in there. Okay? He should be. He should be unanimous. So should Mays. So should Ruth. So should Chipper Jones. Okay. You know, the problem is I'm glad he's not the first. Because what happens is in 100 years from now, if he was the first, there'd be some dumb kid who goes, man, he must have been the greatest.
And right. Here's the other thing that I have with this, too. It's for the baseball writers. And these guys, they're going to, and I'm not saying the guy who voted for or didn't vote for him, you know, maybe he had a problem with Jeter, maybe he didn't. I don't know. But a lot of it comes down to whether or not the baseball writers like you. I mean, it really is. They're going to look at stats a good bit. But if they don't like you, then there's a chance that they may not vote for you.
Listen, the guy who did it, you know, he may have not voted for him. First of all, everyone goes, he's doing it for attention. Well, he's anonymous still. He hasn't like done anything yet. Okay. And he might have not realized he'd be the only one. And he might have said, listen, I only got 10 spots to vote. And I want to vote for these 10 guys. And Jeter's gonna get in anyway. So I need that 10 spot for somebody else. Okay. That could be a reason too, which is a crap reason. It's why they should not have a limit. If you want to vote for 25 guys, should be able to vote for 25 guys, because that would save that too. Okay.
Right.
you know, so if he's just doing it to be a punk, whatever. I mean, I tweeted the other day out and I got Yankee fans mad. He's my hero. And he is to a certain extent because I didn't want him to be the first guy to go in unanimous and be Rivera and Jeter, the two guys. Because what happens is 400 years ago, people who don't educate themselves on baseball will say, those two must have been two of the greatest of all time. And they're not. They're good. They're good, very good Hall of Famers, okay, which I guess makes you great. But they're not on the Willie Mays, the Lou Gehrig, the Babe Ruth, the Hank Aaron plateau. And when you vote them in like that, people put them up there. And there's some Yankee fans who think that Jeter belongs in the Yankee Mount Rushmore. That's why he's overrated. Okay, it's not that he's bad. It's just that they take everything he does. And his whole career has been that way. And when I was watching ball, it was A-Rod, Nomar, and Jeter. Who is better shortstop, okay? And Nomar and A-Rod were much better than Jeter was in their peak seasons. And their stats would show that. And Yankee fans would say, well, yeah, that's true, but Derek just wins. Okay, jackass. He wins because he's on a better team. But Derek is a great captain and a great teammate. No, he's not. Because it turns out that when A-Rod got to the Yankees, and he's the best shortstop in baseball, Jeter didn't move a spot. Jeter could not move to his left 2 feet. He didn't move a spot. Why? Because I'm the Yankee shortstop. Now, Chipper Jones, good example. The Braves wanted to get Vinny Castilla. They needed more offense in their lineup. They wanted to get Vinny Castilla. Vinny Castilla can only play third base. That's Chipper Jones' spot. You know what Chipper Jones did? Go get him. I'll play left field.
And he did.
And Chipper Jones was not what you call a great left fielder. It was probably real hard. Probably some embarrassing things out there. He wasn't horrible, but he did that because I'm a team guy. Okay? That's what the Jeter, the people who think Jeter is, would have done. Oh, no, Jeter goes, I'm not moving. And Joe Girardi wanted to move him out of the two hole and out of the shortstop hole for years at the end because he couldn't play. Okay? He couldn't do it, though. Okay? George Brett came to the Royals at the end of his career and said, listen, stop hitting me third. It's okay. I can't hit third anymore. Drop me down. It's all right. Don Mattingly came to Buck Showalter at the end. Goes, Buck, it's okay. Move me down the order. I get it. It's all right. You're not going to hurt my feelings. Did Jeter ever do that? The captain? No. Mr. All I care about wins? No, because his ego is huge, which is fine. Everyone's got an ego. But don't paint him like all he cared about was wins. He's still unselfish. No, he cared about himself, which is fine. I care about myself too, okay? He's a typical ball player. He cared about himself, had a big ego. Don't paint him out to be St. Derek, the great teammate, okay? And when A-Rod came there, and Jeter didn't like A-Rod because A-Rod gave an interview to the magazine that basically said Derek Jeter benefits from great players, and Derek froze him out. When A-Rod came there, Derek ignored him. And the fans knew that. The fans knew that Derek didn't like A-Rod anymore, so the fans would boo A-Rod as he was struggling. And A-Rod is a mental midget. He's getting booed. It's hurting the team. Okay? 3 years earlier, Jason Giambi was getting booed by Yankee fans. And he was a mental midget. And Derek Jeter got in the papers and said, stop booing Giambi. You're not helping the team. And guess what? They stopped booing him. When A-Rod's getting booed off his ass and he's crying in the dugout, hurting his team, all he cares about wins, right? They asked Derek, hey, Derek, any words to Yankee fans about booing A-Rod? It's not my job to tell fans how to act. He's a dipshit. Okay.
Well, let me give you.
He cares about himself first, his team second, and that's fine. Don't paint him out to be St. Derek. He's a Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer, 3,000 hits, great player. But stop acting like the holy water anoints you when you see him. He is not that kind of dude.
Right. Well, and to wrap that portion of it up, if you go back to, and I'm going to post this later on, about almost what was it? In January, 2 years ago, I posted this story on robincomrade.com about the Derek Jeter herpes tree. Derek D. Jeter gave the herpes to Jessica Alba. In addition to, you wonder how he ended up with her, but he reportedly gave it to Scarlett Johansson, as well as Jessica Biel and Alyssa Milano and Mariah Carey. And his herpes tree has reached out and given it to more than these ladies. Nick Lachey, who married Vanessa Minnelli, is also touched by the hurt. Justin Timberlake married Jessica Biel, and, well, you know how that works out. Sure. Shouldn't be called the Captain. He should change his name to Captain Valtrex. That's what this guy should do. He's infected more people with herpes than anything else. I mean, he is a complete... That's why everybody's like, oh, he's just the player that's just so awesome. This guy's done nothing but give people the hurt, man.
Well, and listen, if you want to read about... If you go to the pescypole.net, there's a column on my blog called Making Fun of Derek Jeter. It's about 12 blog pieces I've written over the past 10 years. They're all factual-based now. It's just not me ranting. It's things from interviews, from quotes, from things that Yankee fans don't like to publicize. These are things from books, from interviews, that he is not the greatest dude in the world in terms of teammates and things he's done and so forth. And on top of that, he could not move to his left 2 feet. He had horrible range. All those sabermetric numbers, Yankee fans hate them. Hate them because they show he can't move. They go, I don't care what they say. I watch him with my eyeballs. And he gets to everything.
There's a thought. If you let him touch your privates, you'll get the herpes and you can see the herpes. You can get, yes. That's what he is. He's Captain Valtra.
Yes.
Normally, you and I don't agree on much, but we agree that Jeter is the king of the herpes.
I had a dude, a Yankee fan on Twitter last week, who was so mad. I was really nice to him. He couldn't understand why people call Jeter overrated. And I simply explained to him, it's not that he's a bad player. You can be really good and be overrated. It's just that his Yankee fans think he's greater than he is. And he started tweeting me and quote tweeting me. Like, I had 45 notifications from him. And then I said, dude, okay, you got to calm down. Then he apologized. He apologized because he overreacted. And then he saw one more of my tweets I wrote earlier and said, F off, and blocked me. Like, he was arguing. I tweeted him twice. He took like 48 times. Like going, I actually took a screenshot of all those tweets and said, I think this guy is mentally unstable. I think it's something to you too. But that's kind of how the Jeter fandom is in the world of Twitter. It's pretty funny.
It really is wrapped up and warped, but Derek Jeter's not a good guy. Sunday, we will talk. We will be able to go over South Carolina's next game, where they will play Vanderbilt. I think that's a home game, isn't it, Mike? On Saturday.
Yes, it is. Hopefully, we
Saturday night not very good. 8 o'clock in the Colonial Life Arena. The South Carolina Gamecocks will look to bounce back from a loss to the Auburn Tigers as they play a shit show Vanderbilt team. I might go to this game just so I can get a picture of Jerry. Is it Stackhouse or Wallace that's the Vanderbilt coach?
Jerry Stackhouse.
Yeah, I want to ask. See, that one of the reasons that I will not go into the press room for that is because you know how I am with North Carolina, and I will ask him point blank, can you read the stat card? I know you have a degree from North Carolina, but I doubt your ability to read. Degrees.
Huh? He's probably call him Dr. Stackhouse. He's probably got his doctorate.
Of course he does. He got it at the drive through at the Taco Hut up there in Chapel Hill. But anyway, that, and then Clemson is on the road at Louisville. Yeah, we'll have all of that. And we're not going to do Super Bowl picks, but hopefully Kale will be better by then. And we'll have all three of us back here. So, yeah, there you go with that. Derek Jeter has the herpes and gave it to everyone else. Comrade, do you have anything else you want to add?
That's it. That sums up.
And with that, the show is a wrap. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Rob and Comrade podcast. Follow Rob on Twitter at Rob Sounds Good and follow the Comrade at the Pesky Pole.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.